Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Exactly sure of the meter for this verse, but anyway, I'll do my best. Iti tava surayas tri adipate ekila loka mala. Iti tava surayas tri adipate kila loka mala. Iti tava surayas tri adipate kila loka mala. Chapana Kat amrit abdin. This word is nectar. I'll just give you a quick translation of it. Where are we? Kata means of discussions. Amrita, nectar. Abdin, the ocean. So it's the nectar of discussions about Krishna. The ocean of the nectar of discussions about Krishna. And that's what it's like, just an unlimited ocean. Avaghaya tapangsi jahu chapanakattam ritabdim avaghaya tapangsi jahu. Chapana kattam ritam avagaya tapangsi jahu. Like I said, I wasn't really sort of had this one sorted out so well. Iti tava surayas triyabi adipate kila lokamala. Chapana kattam ritam abdim avaghaya tapangsi jahu. Kim uta puna sva dhamma vidutashaya kala guna kimuta puna sadhama vidutasaya kala guna kimuta puna sadhama vidutasaya kala guna. Parama bhajanti ye padam ajasya sukhanubhavam. Parama bhajanti ye padam ajasya sukhanubhavam. Parama bhajanti ye param ajasya sukhanubhavam. Kimuta puna sadama vidutasya kala guna. Parama bhajanti ye param ajasya sukhanubhavam. Iti tava surayas triyadipate kila lokamala. Iti tava Chapanakatta mritabdim avakhayata pangsi jahu. Kim uttapuna swadhamma vidutachaya kalakuna. Parama bhajandiye padam bhajasa sukhanu bhavam. There's actually a whole science of how to chant verses based on the composition of the verse. It's called chanda or meter. And I don't know that science, so sorry. Iti tavas, actually, Dravida, he can do that. He looks at the verse, he looks at the structure of the verse, and then he knows how to chant it based on the structure of the verse. Yeah, he taught a class one time, and I just couldn't get it. I attended the class, I just couldn't get the way he was presenting it. Iti tava surayas triadipate kila lokamala. And what's even more impressive is Gadadhar, the member of the Panchatattva, because there's two Gadadharas. And Gadadhar Pandit, who's the member of the Panchatattva, every time he would give a Bhagavatam class, he would chant the verse, and he would chant it in three different meters every time. And so even complicated, some of like the prose verses, he would also chant them in different meters. Very expert. Chapana kattam ritabdim avagayata pangsi jahu. Kim uttapuna swadama vidutasya kalakuna. Parama bhajanti ye para ajasya sukhanu bhavam. So if you can figure out a better meter, then please chant it. Ladies. Iti tava surayasthi adipate kila lokamala. Chapana kattam ritabdim avakhaya tapamsi jahu. Tapuna sadhama vidutashaya kala guna. Parama bhajanti ye parama sucha sukhanu bhavam. Okay. Iti. Thus.
Tava.
Your.
Suraya.
Wise saints.
Three.
Of the three planetary systems.
Of the universe.
Or the three modes of nature. It's interesting how, you know, this one word can mean vastly different things. Sanskrit is very much like that. And as I'll be discussing later on, we see how different people get different understandings from the same words, and very radically different understandings, even to the point where some people will conclude that it's all impersonal, it's all one, and others will conclude a personality from it just by the same words.
Adipate,
O Master,
Akila,
of all,
Loka,
the worlds,
Mala,
the contamination. All the things that exude from the body are called mala, or contaminants, you know, like urine, stool, phlegm, you know, the stuff that comes from your eyes, the stuff that comes from your ears, it's all called mala, contamination.
Chapana,
which eradicates.
Kata,
of discussions.
Amrita,
nectar.
Abdhim,
into the ocean.
Avaghaya,
by diving deeply. Isn't that nice, huh? And he's saying here, this kata, what is it? Katamrit abdhim avaghaya, diving deeply into the ocean of the nectar of the discussions of Krishna. And this same point is, well, not exactly the same point, but a very similar point is made by Rupa Goswami in his Mangalacharan, in the Nectar of Devotion, or the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He talks about how, you know, like on the ocean, the material world, is on the surface of the ocean, it's very, very disturbed by all this agitation by these Mayavadis and different people like that. But he's saying that the sharks of the devotees, he compares the devotees to sharks, because the sharks, they swim deeply in the ocean of the nectarian topics of Krishna. So they're not disturbed by all these like discussions of persons who are either Mayavadis or who don't understand the philosophy so much. And, you know, often you see devotees, when they don't understand philosophy very well, they argue very vehemently on different points and create a lot of disturbance. But someone actually understands the philosophy, they just dive into the philosophy and they relish the nectar. What's that verse it talks about in the Gita? It says, the thoughts of my pure devotees are always enlivened by hearing these topics. You know, they derive great satisfaction and bliss by always conversing with one another these topics about my pastimes. Katayantaschimam nityam tushanti cha ramanti cha. So this tushta means taste. Ramanti, pleasure. They derive great satisfaction and bliss. And what are they deriving the great satisfaction and bliss from? These pastimes of Krishna. There's nothing else in this world that you will derive so much satisfaction and bliss as we do from the pastimes of Krishna. And the great devotees, they immerse themselves in these pastimes because they understand this is the conclusion. This is the goal of life, is to become immersed completely in the pastimes of Krishna. So,
Tapangsi,
their troubles,
Jahu,
have given up.
Kimuta,
what to speak.
Puna,
moreover.
Swa,
their own.
Dhamma,
by the power.
Viduta,
dispelled. Ashaya, of their minds.
Kala,
and of time.
Gunaha,
the undesirable qualities. And undesirable is in parenthesis, It actually is translated as the qualities, but the undesirable has been inserted in there just to give us an understanding of what's being talked about here. Parama, O Supreme One. And the point on that is because guna means qualities, but depending on what it's in relation to, it's either desirable or undesirable. Because it's like we hear that Krishna is said, he's called nirguna, means without, literally translated it would mean without qualities. But actually what it means is without material qualities. We are subject to the gunas, the three modes of material nature, and the result is undesirable. But when we become nirguna or without quality, it doesn't mean we have no quality, because we see transcendental personalities have wonderful qualities. They're not subject to the influence of the material senses, they're not in illusion, they're not cheating, etc., etc. These different qualities that are described there. So because they've become aloof from the effects of material nature, then they have no material quality, but still they have quality, because everything has quality. There's nothing in this manifestation, either spiritual or material, that has no quality. So we can understand that when this word is used, nirguna, in relation to a spiritual personality, it means without material qualities, but possessing spiritual qualities, fully possessing spiritual qualities. Parama, O Supreme One. Bhajanti, worship. Yay, who? Padam, your true nature. Adrasha, uninterrupted. Sukha, of happiness. Anubhavam, in which there is experience. Okay, so translation. Therefore, O Master of the Three Worlds, the wise get rid of all misery by diving deep into the nectarine ocean of topics about you, which washes away all the contamination of the universe. Then what to speak of those who, having by spiritual strength rid their minds of bad habits and freed themselves from time, are able to worship your true nature, O Supreme One, finding within it uninterrupted bliss. So who knows what's going on here? Who knows the discussion? Anyone? Who's speaking to who? Right, and who's glorifying the Lord? Right, then who's narrating this story? Right, and who's narrating that story? And who's narrating that story? Yeah, by Sukadeva Goswami. So Sukadeva Goswami, at the start of this chapter, he asked Krishna. Remember what he asked Krishna? It's a very significant question. How is it that the Vedas are able to... he's saying basically, aren't the Vedas just describing material subjects? Is it possible to glorify the Lord by material words? And then Sukadeva Goswami, see, this is a very significant chapter in the 10th canto. Sukadeva Goswami, rather than giving, I think, Prabhupada sometimes say, you think, go stand in the closet. No, not interested in what we think. We see that Sukadeva Goswami, he emphasizes the point of parampara here by saying, well, actually, this question similarly was asked by Narada Muni to Narayana Rishi. And then when Narada Muni asked Narayana Rishi this question, he narrated another history when in Janaloka, the sages were discussing amongst themselves. Actually, it was, from what I can understand, it was the four Kumaras were discussing amongst themselves. And they selected Sanandan to be the speaker, and then the other ones, they sat there and listened. And the same question was put to him, and he again, presented the answer. So we see the parampara point system is that we understand things through the guru parampara. It's not that we come up with our own speculation. And when we actually have this understanding of guru parampara, then we get the clear essence of the understanding. Whereas if we try to understand it through our own ability, through our own mind and our own senses, then we just become bewildered. Because the material mind, the material senses cannot perceive the transcendental nature of the name, form, quality, as it says, Atasri Krishna Namadi Navavet Graya Mindre, Sevan Mukhi Hije Varo Swayam Evas Bratyadaha. It's impossible to perceive the transcendental nature of the name, form, quality, and pastimes of Krishna through materially contaminated senses. It says, Sevan Mukhi Hije Varo. It's only when the senses become saturated with this transcendental loving service of the Lord. And it's interesting, Rupa Goswami, he says, Sevan Mukhi Hijiva, that this transcendental service begins with the tongue. So we engage the tongue by hearing about the pastimes of Krishna, which is emphasized here in this verse, by the wise get rid of all misery by diving deep into the nectarine ocean of topics about you, which washes away all the contamination of the universe. So they're making that point that, Parikshit Maharaj, actually the Vedas are making that point here, that all these material contaminations which are there in the heart become destroyed by the process of devotional service, particularly hearing and chanting. Same point is again made in the second chapter of the Bhagavatam, the first canto. Very important chapter where in Sutta Goswami, he's been addressed by the sages at Naimisharanya. They asked him six questions. And then he starts his, right off in the second chapter, he starts by his Mangalacharan, he offers glories to, glorification to Sukadeva Goswami, etc. like that. And then he goes right into it and establishing the importance of hearing and chanting. I think about verse, maybe it's 10? Verse 10 starts straight away by the glorification of the process of hearing and chanting. And he points out, Srinvatan Swakata Krishna Punya Shahavani Kirtana Hridyan Tosti Stohobadrani Vidunoti Suvritis Satam. That, by regularly hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, then all the things that are troublesome in the heart become destroyed almost to nil, and loving devotional service to the personality of God, who is praised with the transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. So by the hearing process, and this is what's being pointed out here. And it's interesting because Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, commenting on this verse, he's saying that this is talking about two levels of devotees. The first section there, he says that the wise get rid of all the miseries by diving deep into the ocean nectarine topics about you, which washes away all the contamination of the universe. He says this is a sadhaka. This is describing sadhaka. In the second half, then what to speak of those who, having by spiritual strength, so they have some spiritual power, some spiritual strength here, rid their minds of bad habits. He's saying this is referring to perfected devotees. So you see, and as I was saying, this is a particularly significant chapter of the 10th canto. And the reason I state that is because if you look through the Krishna book, this is four times longer than the next longest chapter. So Prabhupada has really put a lot of energy into this chapter. And we see right at the beginning, and this gives a hint as to why Prabhupada's put so much energy. Wrong chapter. That's probably why I can't find that paragraph. Right in, I think it's the second paragraph, Prabhupada, he quotes what Parikshit Maharaj's question is. And then he says, the purpose of King Parikshit's inquiry was to ascertain from Sukadeva Goswami whether the Vedas ultimately describe the absolute truth as impersonal or personal. That's what he wants to find out. That's what he wants to establish. Are the Vedas discussing impersonal or personal? And then Srila Prabhupada, he puts a lot of energy in this chapter to actually like giving the information about what the impersonalists are saying and then establishing the personal truth. And that's one of the reasons why this chapter is so long, because Prabhupada's giving very, very clear explanations of how it is the impersonalists conceive things and how it is they're wrong. And Prabhupada's actually fulfilling his mission, because as we understand in his second pranam mantra, it says, Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatane. He's come to kick out this Nirvishesha. What does Nirvishesha mean? impersonalist philosophy and Shunyavadi, this voidist philosophy, because Shunyam in Sanskrit means zero, or as Prabhupada would say, jiro. It means zero. So that's what one of his prime missions was, to kick out these impersonalist and voidist philosophies. So he goes to great extent. Because it's interesting, because this chapter is an average-sized chapter. It's only got 50 verses in it. And if you go through and you look at most of the chapters, there's a couple of shorter chapters. I think there's one chapter that goes down to about 24 verses. But most of the chapters are around 48, 49, 50, something like that, verses. Yeah, and this chapter is no different. It has an average amount of verses. Yet in the Krishna book, it is four times as long as the next longest chapter. So therefore, I'm saying it is a very significant chapter, and that Prabhupada, he uses this to clearly establish the conclusion of the Veda. And as Krishna says, he's in the Bhagavad Gita, which also, interestingly enough, this is the verse that Prabhupada quotes more than any other verse. You know which verse that is in the Bhagavad Gita? He quotes it a lot more than any other verse. Savasya cha hamriti sanavishto mata smriti jnanam apovanam cha vedais cha savamahe vedantakrit vedavid eva cha ham. So Krishna is saying, he says that I am seated in everyone's heart, from me come knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed I am the compiler of the Vedanta and the knower of the Veda. So he's saying that by all the Vedas I am to be known. He's saying that this is actually Vedanta Krit, that the conclusion of the Vedas is me. So again, Prabhupada's mission was to destroy this voidist and impersonalistic philosophy that is so prevalent, not just in India, but right throughout the world. I mean, in the West they have their own kind of like twisted version of Mayavadi philosophy, but it's all, like the Australian sort of Mayavadi conclusion, it's all good. Yeah? Isn't it? You speak to practically anyone, they say, it's all good, enjoy. I remember at the dentist a couple of weeks ago? And I've just had a root canal thing done, and the pump full of all these drugs, and I'm my head swimming, and the girl just goes, enjoy. I'm thinking to myself, you can enjoy this? It's just, they've got this like bizarre Mayavadi philosophy. It's a twisted Mayavadi philosophy, but it is nothing but Mayavadi philosophy, because why? It's all good. Well, maybe you think it's all good. I don't see that. There's so many things in this world I don't like. I see discrimination. Some things I enjoy, some things cause me suffering. There's discrimination there. But to think that it's all good is Mayavadi, because they're not making any discrimination. If it's all good, why don't you eat, sweet rice with sand in it if it's all good? No, but someone who has discrimination understands this is very unpalatable. Or just like, when you're eating, sometimes we get this sag, spinach sabji, and if it's not washed properly, you get some little grit in it. Very unpleasant, to crunch on, a bit of sand. But if it's washed thoroughly, it's not, spinach is a very relishable vegetable. Actually, Lord Chaitanya's favorite vegetable was sag. And there's so many different types. In Bengal, I think there's 27 different types of sag you can get. Here in Australia, you get two. But in Bengal, they've got 27 different types. Although some of them are not so... Remember they told me about that mota sag? I said it was horrible. It was pretty chewy. Yeah, but there's different ways of cooking these things. But so there is a lot of variety there, and Srila Prabhupada came to establish that the variety, and he came to establish why there is variety, is because it all comes from a person. And Prabhupada's pointing out that the conclusion of the Veda, and another important statement he makes here, which is, let me see if I can find it quickly. He's saying, this prayer of the Vedas personified illustrates that the Vedas are meant for helping the conditioned souls to understand Krishna. The Shrutis, or personified Vedas, offer glories to the Lord again and again, saying, Jai, Jai. This is about two verses ago. This indicates that the Lord is the most glorious of all. And this is Prabhupada makes some very important statements in this chapter. Of all his glories, the most important is his causeless mercy upon the conditioned souls in reclaiming them from the clutches of Maya. So Prabhupada is establishing that actually, yes, the Vedas are talking about nothing but Krishna. And what is the purpose of the Veda? Is to give them this knowledge of Krishna, to lead them to Krishna. And this is part of Krishna's glory, you know, because what are the Vedas talking about? They're actually talking about the words of Krishna. Now, then one might wonder, why don't we just study the Vedas? Because that's what they're talking about. There's Vedanta Krit, Veda Vid, Eva Charham. There's nothing but Krishna that we're being talked about. So why don't we study the Veda? And I was actually asked this question the other day. They said to me, have you read the Vedas? No. Why not? Well, actually, if you analyse the situation in this age, the Vedas originally were one. And then Vyasadevi divided them into four. Anyone remember the four? Sama, Rig, Yajur, and Atharva. Atharva Veda. So there are four Vedas. And then when Vyasadeva, after that, he then gave them to different branches of these Vedas to different disciples. And he broke them into over 1,000 different branches. One of the Vedas, I think it was the Sama. Don't quote me on this because I'll get it wrong. It's actually described, not in great detail, but in the 6th chapter of the 12th canto, this is described to some extent. One of the Vedas was divided into 100 branches. One of the Vedas was divided into 1,000 branches. Another Veda was divided into 21. And I think the last one was divided into 9 branches. So different disciples were given charge of these different sections. And over a period of time, they became more and more divided. And also, in each branch, there's 4 divisions. You have the Brahmanas, the Sanghitas, the Aranyakas, and... Sanghita, Aranyaka, Brahmanas, and Upanishads. Yeah, so each of the Vedas is divided into these 4 branches. So overall, you have over 4,000 different books that are there in the Vedas. So, you know, in order to really understand Krishna, because actually the Vedas deal a lot with the 3 modes of material nature. They talk about, they give information which helps those persons who are influenced by the modes of material nature to connect themselves with Krishna. So in order to get the conclusion, then one would have to be very careful about which books you study. But then the other problem comes, and this is explained by Jiva. There's a lot of problems with understanding the Vedas. Jiva Goswami describes this. One problem is that less than 6% of this is still available. Of all these 4,000 books, less than 6%. I mean, I can't remember the exact numbers, but in the Tattva Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami goes into this in some detail, and then the commentaries that are given by Gopi Puranadana and Satyanarayan, they discuss this in detail. And so less than 6% of all the Vedas are available. And it's also interesting, it's like, what other books are available? Is because Jiva Goswami in the Tattva Sandarbha, he discusses the Itihasas and the Puranas also, which are giving information. Let's not jump ahead. So let's on the Veda. Problems also there with the Vedas is, there's not that much available with the Vedas. Also, the language of the Veda. There's 2 types of Sanskrit. One is called Vedika Sanskrit, which is very strict, rigid rules, and the other one is called Lokika Sanskrit, which is kind of like common or local, like colloquialisms, you know, so say for instance in Australia, we are supposed to speak English, yeah? But how many people in this country actually speak English?
G'day mate, how you going?
I mean, like, if you write that down and give it to an English person, they wouldn't understand what it is you're talking about. How you going? Yeah? Did you have a good weekend? You know, all these like Australians just tend to run all the words so it just becomes one word. So it's like lokika. It's like colloquialism. It's only understood locally. Yeah? So the Vedas are actually in Vedika Sanskrit, which is very strict, rigid, many, many rules. And in order to understand this Sanskrit, there are 6 divisions or Vedangas which someone needs to study in order to understand this Sanskrit. And I mentioned before the Chandas. There's Chandas, Niruktas. What else is there? I wrote them down because I knew I wouldn't remember them. Yeah, Shiksha, which means pronunciation. Then Kalpa means the performance of yagya, sacrifices. Then Vyakarana means grammar. Yeah? And then Nirukti means the meanings. Like Prabhupada, I often see that Prabhupada refers to Nirukti dictionaries. Yeah? So that means like word meanings or derivations. And then Jyotish is astrology and astronomy. And the last one is Chandra, or the Vedic meter. So in order for one to understand this Vedic Sanskrit, they need to understand these things. So that's why Prabhupada, he would when devotees would say, oh yeah, I want to learn Sanskrit, Prabhupada would discourage them because it would take 20 years just to learn the grammar. In order to understand the Veda, because it's so complicated. And that's another thing that's limiting us. And then, again, another problem comes is that in Kali Yuga, people have very, very poor memories. What does it say in the beginning of the Bhagavatam? What's that verse? You know that verse for you? Svalpamasya made us. Prayanapa yusasa, kalabasmin yuge manda. Manda sumanda matayo manda bhagya hi upadutaha. It's talking about how people have very, very short memories. I'm the embodiment of that. I mean, I just can't remember anything. I got a knock on the head like 10 years ago, and honestly, I can't remember a thing. It took me a couple of days even to remember who I was. You know? It's just like, you know, and verses, they just, I mean, you know, I've learned hundreds and hundreds of verses over the years, and just, you know, I've forgotten more than I can remember. And this is just, you know, everyone is subject to this. And I was reading something yesterday, because, right, it's like people are very concerned these days with the environment. It's a pity we weren't so concerned about this 5,000 years ago. You know, because actually, everything in this age is contaminated. You know, because I was reading about this description of the four Kumaras, how they're purified. Very, very pure personalities. And in this description, I was talking about how, the water, the air, the very atmosphere is polluted in this age. And it's polluted with the modes of nature, passion, ignorance, particularly. And this influences the living entity. You know, and it says that they're short-lived, they're unlucky, they're quarrelsome, they're lazy, misguided, and above all, always disturbed. This is the embodiment of Kali Yuga. So, you know, with living entities suffering from these different difficulties, then it's so difficult to try to study something like Sanskrit, and especially, you know, Vedic Sanskrit, which is very strict and rigid. But then, of course, there are rules in the Sanskrit which, you know, particularly with things like the Vedas, where they can't be changed, because there's three divisions of rules which sort of make sure that the things can't be changed, which then leads us into, well, what about the Puranas and Itihashas? Because they're Laukika Sanskrit, which is easier to understand, it's like, you know, colloquial or local Sanskrit, people can understand it easier, but with the Puranas and the Itihashas, there's no such rules with the Sanskrit. So that then we see, for instance, with the Mahabharata, what is commonly accepted as the Mahabharata these days is not even vaguely close. There's so much. I was listening to a tape the other day where Sridharana Maharaj was explaining about this, and he was quoting from some, you know, like Vedic authority. I think it was Madhvacharya, and he was talking about how the Mahabharata has become thoroughly corrupted. So you can't actually understand in the Mahabharata what's actually the original Mahabharata and what's like the local interpretation or things that have been added into the Mahabharata just so people can sort of like, you know, just like we see, you know, with other texts or scriptures that are around, that they've become so corrupted over the years you can't understand whether it's the truth or not anymore because they've become so corrupted. Even things like we see that our acharyas, they regularly quote verses from the Narad Pancharatra. You know, there are really well-known verses in ISKCON from the Narad Pancharatra, but you try and find those verses in the Narad Pancharatra. You know, I've read two versions in the Narad Pancharatra, and they are completely different. They don't even say vaguely the same thing. The only thing that's similar is the title. Yeah. And the same with the Padma Purana. Padma Purana is a gigantic book. You can't actually get very much of it. So how are you going to understand these things through Puranas and Itihashas? Because you can't trust the reliability of them in terms of philosophy. You can't trust them. And then so then some people may say Vedanta Sutra. And then Jiva Goswami, he points out, you know, because Vedanta Sutra is the commentary of Vyas. Or it's, you know, as Vyas is like has like you know, codified the Veda. Understanding the Veda is very difficult, so he codified the Veda. But then Jiva Goswami, he points out that because it is terse or very brief, you know, the verses are, you know, Atata Brahma Gigyasa, you know, a very short verse, which is presenting a very complex and elaborate conclusion, philosophical conclusion. You know, but it's very terse, and he says esoteric, hard to understand. Yeah? So actually you need to, and we see with the Vedanta Sutra, is different people read the Vedanta Sutra and they come up with some very, very far out conclusions. And it's just so different. But then Jiva Goswami, it's really nice what he says. Let's see if I can find it quickly. And he discusses all, because in the Tattvasandarbha, right in the beginning, he starts off with his Mangalacharan, which means, you know, offering prayers and obeisances to the previous acharyas, etc. Then he talks about epistemology, or how it is that Vaishnavas understand different things. And he goes through, there's ten major pramans, or ways of understanding things, but he accepts that shabda, or this transcendental knowledge is the best way of understanding things, and of those he identifies one in particular, which I'm just trying to find the verse here, which is really nice verse. Sorry, I should prepare a little bit better by it. And so basically what he's saying, he says, you know, he's thanking the inquirer for his question, saying, yeah, this is very wonderful because it brings me to my favourite topic, the Srimad Bhagavatam. So he's establishing. See, the whole thing that he's doing in the beginning of the Tattvasandarbha. So Tattva means the truth. He's establishing what is our basis for the truth. How do we understand the truth? And then he's pointing out that all these other means, you know, like whether it's like local tradition or inference and all these different histories, etc., like that, we can't actually understand the truth for these because they're based on the basic defects of the living entity, which is, you know, imperfect senses put into illusion, etc., like that. And he's saying that the only way we can actually understand these things is through receiving knowledge from a thoroughly purified person. And the same is established by Sutta Goswami in the second chapter of the Bhagavatam. He's pointing out the essence of understanding. He's saying, you know, he's established that hearing and chanting about the glories of the Lord, this is the way to perfection. And then he's saying the best way of hearing and chanting about the Lord is through the Bhagavatam. And he quotes that verse, Krishna Swa Dhamma Parayate. How the Bhagavad Purana is as brilliant as the sun. And unfortunately, I can't find this easily because it is a really nice verse. Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, so he establishes how the Bhagavatam is the best means because it doesn't have a material source, because anything that has a material source is limited. You know, because as we're saying, living entities, they have four basic defects. They have imperfect senses. They're in illusion. They're put into illusion. They make mistakes. And they cheat. And so as we're saying, you know, with all these different scriptures that are around in the world, we see that people have included in those scriptures, you know, things of their own invention, basically. And that doesn't just apply to scriptures that we follow. It applies to all the scriptures in the world. And the people have added things just for their own purposes. And in this way, the message has become corrupted. And even Krishna, he says that in the fourth chapter of the Gita, that, you know, he established this science, but in course of time the succession was broken, and therefore the science as it is appears to be lost or corrupted. And that's happened in so many other traditions. Yet with the Srimad Bhagavatam, even, you know, different, you know, not only, you know, like, you know, our acharyas, but also material authorities, they accept that the Srimad Bhagavatam is intact and it has not become corrupted. And Lord Chaitanya himself, he accepted the Srimad Bhagavatam as the Amala Purana, the spotless Purana. There's no defect in the Bhagavatam because it doesn't have a material source. And it's just directly discussing the topics of Krishna. So here, in this verse, it's very interesting that the Vedas themselves are saying that the best way to overcome the influence of material nature is by the topics of Krishna. And as we've established, the best way to discuss topics of Krishna is in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's significant that here in the Bhagavatam, Sukadeva Goswami is discussing how the Vedas are saying that this discussion of the topics, this is the best thing. And he's also, early on in the Bhagavatam, saying that the best way to discuss the topics of Krishna is the Bhagavatam itself. Yeah? So this conclusion is being made here, is that, you know, the way we overcome, and as I was mentioning before, there's that verse from the Gita, which says, katayantas chamam nityam tishanti charamanti cha, that they derive great status of the thoughts of my pure devotees always. No, but that's the second half of the verse. They're always conversing with one another. Yeah. So it says tushanti cha ramanti. Tushanti, they're getting a lot of taste. It's not they just talk about these things and think, oh yeah, this is very nice, this is very good. They're actually getting enlivened. And this is the nature of the topics of Krishna, is they're actually very, very enlivening. A person becomes spiritually enlivened. And as we were saying before, this is because all the troublesome things in the heart are destroyed almost to nil. And loving devotional service to the personality of Godhead, whose praise with transcendental songs are established as an irrevocable fact. Irrevocable, it can't be changed. So when this becomes established in the heart, when this truth about Krishna becomes established in the heart, then the heart becomes purified. And when the heart becomes purified, then one's true nature is revealed. And what is the nature of the jiva? Anandamoya. This is the nature of the jiva. The nature of the jiva is blissful. So because of this material contamination, we're feeling disturbed, we're feeling agitated. This is normal. Because the material nature, especially in this day and age, is so disturbed. It's so disturbing. I mean, just go and spend a couple of months in, not, don't just go to Mayapur for a day or two. Go to Mayapur for a couple of months, for 6 months, and see how you feel. See the change that comes about in you, right? Then come back to the West and see how you deal with it. It's really disturbing. That you can sense, you can really tangibly feel the agitated nature or the agitated atmosphere in the West as compared to some place like Mayapur, especially if you're trying to immerse yourself in spiritual activities. Mayapur is a very exceptional place like that. And so you get a tangible sense of the difference, or a tangible sense of how disturbed the atmosphere is here in the West. The very air is disturbed. But, you know, so it's not surprising that people are disturbed in this world. But by the process of devotional service, then we're able to purify the heart, so it's no longer affected by the modes of nature. And as it says, Sutta Goswami says that this transcendental loving service, the personality of Godhead, becomes established as irrevocable in that fact. Yeah? So, and this is all achieved here, as is being pointed out here by the personified Vedas, is they get rid of all the miseries by diving deep into the nectarian ocean of topics about you, which washes away all the contamination of the universe. And we find all throughout the Bhagavatam, the same point is being made again and again and again. The Bhagavatam is essentially giving us the message that, you know, hearing and chanting the topics of Krishna, this is the essence of spiritual life. Yeah? Tasmat Sankirtana, it says in the fourth canto, Tasmat Sankirtana Vishnu Jagan Mangala Mahangasam Mahatam Apikairavya Vidyaikantrika. I can't even say it. Vidyaikantrika Niskritam. This is therefore, my dear king, you try to understand, he's just saying you understand that this chanting of the holy name of the Lord, this is the most auspicious activity in the entire universe. It's able to uproot the reactions to even the greatest sins. It says, Jagam Mangalam Amasam, Mahatam apikairavya. This is even the greatest of sins. It uproots them like they're nothing. It's just like, you know, you go out in the garden and you put some of the weeds, you can pull them up very easily. But some weeds have very deep, strong roots. And even though they're only a little weed like that, you try to pull on them, they're very hard to get out. But someone who's very powerful can just pull it out like nothing. You know, you try and pull out a tree. Anyone tried to pull out a tree? Not an easy thing. But Bhima, very easy. When he was fighting with, what's that, Asura? The one in Ekachakra? Near Ekachakra, what was that Asura? Bakasura, thank you, yeah, Bakasura. When Bhima was fighting with Bakasura, they were both uprooting huge trees. And of course, Bhima, he would clip all the leaves off because he figured if I leave the leaves on there, it's not going to hurt as much. So he'd take all the leaves off and hit him with this tree. You know, gigantic tree. You know, maybe hundreds of feet tall. And he's just ripping up and using it like as a club or something, you know. So for him, it's very, very simple to do things like that. And Baka was doing the same thing. He was pulling up trees and hitting with trees. You know, so for someone who has that kind of strength, very simple. But for us, you know, we don't have that kind of power. Go out in the yard and try and pull up this palm tree out here. It's just like, forget it, you know, you wouldn't even move the thing. So in the same way, it's saying here that through diving into the ocean of the topics of Krishna, it helps us to uproot even the most deep-rooted anarthas within the heart. Understand that if we just, and it doesn't mean we just like, you know, read the book and then we go about our nonsense activities and then come back and I'll read the book. It's very much like Prabhupada would give the analogy of sometimes that people, they go to the confession and that they go and, oh, you know, I've done this sin, I've done that sin, you know, and expect that it's all absolved and they go back and they perform their sinful activities. No, this will not help. And actually, Prabhupada, in the second canto, he discusses the 10 offences. He discusses 10 offences of the holy name in several places. Also, the last paragraph of the 8th chapter of the Nectar Devotion, he discusses the 10 offences. But in the second canto, when he discusses the 10 offences, he talks about the 7th offence. Who knows what the 7th offence is? The strength of the holy name, right? He talks about the 7th offence as being the most grievous offence, the most difficult to recover from. So we see that so many people are engaged in spiritual activity. And, you know, maybe they're following the process, discussing the past, etc. Because they continue to commit simple activities, then they're negating the effects of what they're doing because they're committing offences against the holy name. So, yes, hearing about the pastimes of the Lord, is immersing ourselves in the pastimes of the Lord, is the most potent means of purification. We have to understand what it means, immersing it. You know, to immerse yourself in the activities of Krishna means giving up all simple activities. That's part of the process. It's not that we can just go on with our nonsense lives and expect that we're going to get the result of the purification. No, we need to, follow some basic guidelines and 4 regular principles. Prabhupada gave some very, very basic guidelines. Chanting 16 rounds, 4 regular principles. If we are able to do that, then it will become possible for us to immerse ourselves in the nectarine ocean. And this word here is very, very nice. Katamritabdhim avaghaya. Diving deeply into the. And this is, we see, as Rupa Goswami describes in his Mangalacharan in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, this is what the great devotees do. They just dive deeply. And they're so immersed in the ocean of Krishna's pastimes that all the goings on in this material world are just like, just nothing. They're just sort of, it's like the sharks, they're down deep in the ocean. And the storm, they have these cyclones and tornadoes and things and hurricanes on the ocean. Coming up in January and that, you get all these cyclones will go down the coast on Queensland. So the shark, they're very, very deep in the ocean. And even though there can be a violent storm with winds going at hundreds of kilometres an hour and, blowing things and cars and ships and things all over the place, they don't know anything about it. Because they're immersed deeply in the ocean. So the same with the devotees is because they're immersed. And when I say devotees, I don't just mean, like anyone. I mean devotees who have actually given up sinful activities and who are immersing themselves in Krishna's activities. They're just completely absorbed. And we see, like the Goswamis, they were just completely absorbed. They would spend their whole day just discussing about Krishna and deriving so much satisfaction from discussing about Krishna. So this is the sweetest thing. because Krishna's pastimes are so sweet and attractive. The gopis in Vrindavan, they would just sing about Krishna's pastimes all day long. All the different residents of Vrindavan, they become immersed, they become absorbed in Krishna's pastimes. And they're deriving great pleasure from it. So we can also experience that same pleasure. It's not like we have to become a gopi or anything. Or because we're not gopis, we can't do it. No, the idea is like we give up our simple activities. And also, the discussion of the topics of Krishna will help us to give up these activities. It's like Prabhupada, he explained that for those who want to, you know, become freed from sex desire, is they just discuss the pastimes of Krishna, particularly the Rasalila topics in the Krishna book, which will help them to overcome these lusty desires. So by becoming freed from lusty desires, becoming free from material desires, then we become qualified to immerse ourselves in this nectar of Krishna's pastimes. And in this way we'll actually experience this supreme happiness. Not this ordinary happiness like people, you know, when they get a new job or they get a new car or they win the lotto or something like that, they actually feel elated for a day or two and then they spend all the money and it's back to the same old thing. No, the bliss that is ananda. Ananda actually means eternal bliss. It's not something that's temporary that lasts for a week or two. It's eternal. So the ananda, anandam buddhi vardhanam pradipadam bunam, this anandam buddhi, this vardhanam, this is like we see govardhan. So vardhan means like nourishing and expanding. So it's the ever increasing ocean of bliss, you know, that comes from discussing the topics of Krishna and from chanting the holy name of Krishna. So I will read the purport. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, in the previous verse, those Shrutis whose presentation of the Supreme Truth may seem impersonal clarified their true purpose. Now in the present verse, those who focus exclusively on the divine personality of Godhead, who speak of his transcendental pastimes, take their turn in praising him. Because all the Vedas declare the supremacy of the personality of Godhead as the cause of all causes, discriminating persons should take to his worship. By diving into the ocean of his glories, intelligent devotees help dispel the distress of all souls and loosen their own burning attachment to materialistic life. These advancing devotees gradually give up all material attachment and lose any interest they once had in troublesome austerities of karma, jnana and yoga. So that's talking about sadhakas. Beyond these devotees are the suris, or the connoisseurs of spiritual truth. This is the advanced devotees, who honour the nectarine ocean of the Supreme Lord's glories by immersing themselves fully within it. These mature devotees of the Supreme Lord achieve unimaginable perfection. The Lord, reciprocating their sincere endeavours, empowers them to realise him in his personal form. Remembering with rapture the Lord's intimate pastimes and entourage, they are automatically freed from the last subtle traces of mental contamination and from sensitivity to the unavoidable pains of disease and old age. Referring to the purifying power of devotional service, the Shrutis say, Tadyata pushkara palasha apona slishyante evam evam vidi papam karmana slishyate. Just as water does not adhere to a lotus leaf, so sinful activities do not adhere to one who knows the truth in this way. Shatapata Brahmana, Taittiriya Brahmana, Brihad Aranyaki Upanishad, and the Bodhayana Dharma Shastra all concur, Na Kamana Lipyate Papakena. One thus avoids becoming tainted by sinful activities. Actually, Taittiriya Upanishad got its name in a very interesting way. You know what Taittiriya means? Pigeon or dove. Yeah? So I think it was a disciple of Vaishampayana. He was like basically, you know, blowing his own horn in front of his guru and criticizing other disciples. And Vaishampayana got very upset with him and got angry with him actually. He said, you know, you're such a rascal disciple. You give me back all the knowledge I've given you and get out of here. I don't want to see you again. So it's in the Bhagavatam, this story. He vomited up the Veda, the Vedic knowledge that Vaishampayana had given him. And then all these disciples, they were standing there, look, this is all the Vedic knowledge, I want this, you know. And because it's not appropriate for a Brahmana to eat vomit, they all took the form of pigeons and they ate up the vomit. And that way they got the Vedic knowledge. I mean, it's an interesting story that's there in the Shastra. And it describes how they greedily wanted to get this knowledge. It's actually in the 6th chapter of the 12th canto, this story. The Rig Veda refers to the Supreme Lord's pastimes as follows. Vishnu nu kama viryani pravocham ya prativani vimane rajangsi. Only he may fully enunciate the heroic deeds of Lord Vishnu, who can count all the particles of dust in the world. Many Shruti mantras glorify devotional service to the Lord, such as Eko Vasi Saragoye Nubhajanti Diras Tesham Sukham Shashvatam Netaresham. He is the one omnipresent Lord and controller. Only those wise souls who worship him attain eternal happiness, not anyone else. In this connection, Srila Sridhar Swami prays, Sakara Veda Ganerita Sadgunas Twam Iti Sarva Manisi Jana Rata Twai Subhadra Guna Shavana Divis Tava Pada Smaranena Gata Klama. Because all the Vedas describe your transcendental qualities, all thoughtful persons are attracted to hearing and chanting about your all auspicious qualities. Thus, by remembering your lotus feet, they are freed from material distress. And there's another nice verse in the Bhagavatam, which Prabhupada also quotes a lot. He's saying that those impersonals, they actually think, they perform many, many austerities, etc., and they actually think, he says, vimuktamani now, they think they're liberated. But he explains that because they're actually not liberated, they're in illusion, because they have avishuddha buddhaya, they have this impure intelligence. And he says, therefore, because of their impure intelligence, he says, patanti ado yushmita, they fall down. Again, they fall down. And he says, this is Lord Brahma explaining this, the reason they fall down is because they neglect the lotus feet of Krishna. So anyone who neglects the lotus feet of Krishna, doesn't matter what their spiritual process is, eventually they must fall down again. Unless they take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, they must fall down. Because this is the position of the living entity, is to be fixed at the lotus feet of Krishna. As is being pointed out here by this prayer from Sridhar Swami. It says, thus by remembering your lotus feet, they are freed from all material distress. So we can understand that someone who doesn't remember Krishna's lotus feet must suffer distress. And this is the conclusion of the Bhagavatam, is we need to take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. We need to take shelter of the topics and pastimes of Krishna. And in this way, we achieve true spiritual emancipation. Not this vimuktamani, this vimuktamani, this imagined liberation. Now, the Bhagavatam gives us factual liberation. If we take shelter of the Bhagavatam, we take shelter of the descriptions, the philosophy contained in the Bhagavatam, this gives us factual understanding and factual liberation. Nothing else. There's no other way of achieving it in this age. As it says, Krishna Swadavaha Davagyan, Kalanasna, it says, Kalanasna Dishamesha Puranak. That persons who have lost their vision due to the dense darkness of ignorance in this age of Kali should get light from this Bhagavat Purana. It's like the brilliant sun. And it's just like, when it's completely dark, like in the last few days it's been very dark at night, the clouds and stuff like that. When the sun comes up, you can see everything. So soon as the sun of the Bhagavatam is there in our hearts, then everything is revealed to us. We understand our own nature, we understand the nature of Krishna, we understand the nature of everything. Simple thing. Just by taking shelter of this Bhagavat Purana. It is as brilliant as the sun. It is the most amazing literature, the most amazing scripture. And it's just suitable for persons in this age. The other, even like the Itihasas, people are very fond of reading Itihasas, but, they're so corrupted. Some of the things that are, I've read two different versions of the Mahabharata. One of them was by Kamala Subramaniam, who's a Mayavadi. So you have to filter out all the bits and pieces that she's added in there, her own philosophy. And the other is by a Bengali called Dutt. I haven't read all of it, but I've read a bit of it. It's quite, this many books. is quite involved. And he's a scholar, Bengali scholar. Yeah. So he has his scholarly interpretation. We know mostly with the scholars, they find it very difficult to accept that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And you know, there's so many different versions of the Mahabharata. Even like, you know, for the demons they've got one version, for the earthly planets they've got another version, for the heavenly planets they've got another version. So it's very difficult to understand the truth through these ways. But and as it says, in the Mahabharata itself, Tako Pratishta Shrutaya Vibhinna, it says that, you know, very hard to understand the conclusion. Yeah? Even but it says Shrutayo Vibhinna, because the Vedas are many, many branches. How can you understand? Not, you know, saying it's not possible. And this is Tako Pratishta Shrutaya Vibhinna Naso Rishi Yashamatam. By approaching the rishis, what's the qualification of being a rishi? You're a rishi because your opinion is different from the other rishi. So many opinions are there. This is dharmasya tattvam nihitam guhayam. The truth, the dharma of dharma, dharmasya tattva. Nihitam guha, this guha means cave. Yeah, so guhayam is a secret, it's a deep secret. Mahajaniyena gata sapanta, that's hidden within the heart of the Mahajans. So we follow the path of the great devotees, and all the great devotees in our sampradaya, what do they point out? They point to the Bhagavatam. They all point, okay, the Gita, etc., these are all important books, but primarily they point to the Bhagavatam. This is the best means in this age. You know? Of course, it doesn't minimize the chanting of Hare Krishna, because if you're not chanting Hare Krishna, if you're not following the Four Regal Principles, you'll never understand. And we have to follow the spiritual process in order to be able to enter into the Bhagavatam. And we see that all our acharyas, specifically and particularly the Goswamis, they put so much emphasis. Like Jiva Goswami in his philosophical treatise called the Satsandhavas is essentially just establishing the truths that are given by the Bhagavatam. He's just, you know, the Tattva Sandhavas is talking about the Tattva, the truth. The Priti Sandhavas is talking about the loving relationship. There's all these different Sandhavas they're talking about. They take six aspects of the truth, and then he gets all these verses from the Bhagavatam to establish all these different points. He's just broken into six different categories. You go through the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which is one of Rupa Goswami's greatest works. It's a very important book for us here in ISKCON. And what is he using to establish all these points? Srimad Bhagavatam. And you go through it, and maybe the references aren't there, but you go through it, and you're saying, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, da, 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 and he points to this point, that point, so many points, it's all from the Bhagavatam. So if we can just, you know, purify ourselves and just you know, immerse ourselves in the Bhagavatam, then we'll actually, you know, experience this ocean of nectar. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions at all? Yeah.
You mentioned earlier that the Lord says he's to be known by the Vedas. Why don't we understand? Are there Vedas in the spiritual world? Or do the Vedas suddenly appear at the beginning of creation to wake Mahavishnu from his slumber? And Lord Rama, who's born already from his navel, is already impregnated with the Vedas. So, but he carries out austerities. And then he hears the Gayatri Mantra, and then eventually the knowledge is passed to the Sangha. So what is passed to the Sangha? Is it the whole activities of the Lord's pastimes, which are included in the Vedas, or what are the Vedas actually that are passed down to the Sangha?
The Vedas are eternal. They don't sort of manifest. They're eternal. They're always existing. Now, exactly what the Sun God receives, I don't know, but it does say that, you know, I imparted this supreme science to the Sun God, Bibhishman. So, you know, exactly what he imparted to him, it would seem to me it's just like the same science that's given in the Gita, because that's where it's discussed. But exactly the details of what he receives, and even like, you know, you look at the what slokas he gave the Sun God, I have no idea. But, you know, you look at the Bhagavatam's expanded from four verses. You know, Lord Rama heard those four verses, and the whole Bhagavatam's expanded from that. So different persons, depending upon their intelligence, receive the knowledge in different ways. Just like Brahma, he heard Krishna's flute. And Krishna's flute was vibrating the Savitra Gayatri, the Brahma Gayatri. And then from that, he understood how to create the whole universe. But when I hear the Savitra Gayatri, I don't think of all that. I don't understand all that. So according to the intelligence of a person, they'll hear one thing and we'll get different... even like in common language, in the way we speak commonly, you know, I may speak to you in one way and you will hear a particular thing, but someone else will hear something else. So according to our conditioned nature also. And that's just like I was saying before, that the Mahabharata, there's many different versions of the Mahabharata. There's a version for the people in the hellish planets. There's a million verses in that version. I think there's something like, I could be wrong here, but I think about 180,000 verses for our level, and then in Lord Brahma, the heavenly planets is different. So exactly what was related to Vibhishvan, I don't know, but it was the science, as Krishna says. He says that I gave this science to Vibhishvan, the sun god. So exactly what it was, I don't know. You had a question, bro?
Yeah,
a comment?
Because, you made a nice comment in the class that the Puranas and Mahabharata, the Vyasa, they can't be taken at this point in Kali Yuga as being pure or as having its original origins because of the degradations. But then, considering that Bhagavatam is a Purana, then we would also question whether or not the Bhagavatam also has its material. I mean, what sets it apart besides the fact that faith we say, well, it's unknown, it's pure, and Paramahamsa is here, and we can say those things. But in terms of like practicality, then how do we say that the Bhagavatam is pure and intact, whereas the other Puranas, like the Bhagavad Purana, which is also an exalted literature, we don't say that that is as it was. And we don't say that the Mahabharata is as it was. Even though we do study the Mahabharata, so it's potency even in this day and age. And what we do read in the Mahabharata, so it's potency in this day and age. We don't say it's as it was.
Yeah.
So how do we differentiate it from the time?
Well, I was listening to this class the other day where Sridhara Maharaj was talking about it, and he was saying it's not just our conclusion, but it's also the conclusion of scholars that the Bhagavatam is intact. It hasn't become corrupted. It's in its original form.
So do we differentiate, meaning that just all of the shlokas are still there as they were originally, whereas we say that the Bhagavad Gita and Mahabharata say that portions of this
scene have been adulterated
at all?
Yeah, well, Jiva Goswami, he explains that here, where he points out that because the Puranas and Itihasas are written in Laukika Sanskrit, and there's no such rules like that, then they become easily corrupted, whereas the Srimad Bhagavatam, because it's saying here that the Puranas and Itihasas are listed, this is in Anucheta 13.3, are listed as being the fifth Veda. So they're important, and they actually come from the same source. We don't deny their importance. Yet later on he states that because they're in Laukika Sanskrit, which means colloquialism or local, that there's no strict rules to keep them intact, so they've become corrupted like that. I know that like Sridhara Maharaj, when he's trying to translate the Srimad Bhagavatam, from what I've heard, it was very difficult, Mahabharata, very difficult because he couldn't find a critical edition of it, which was accepted that this is the original book. And I remember speaking to Krishna Chetra about that. He was saying with many of the books it's like that, with many of the Shastras it's like that. Narada Pancharatra is like that. There's like Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and all our acharyas, they quote verses from the Narada Pancharatra that you cannot find in the Narada Pancharatra these days. So who do we accept? We accept the scholar? Or do we accept our acharyas? Obviously we're going to accept our acharyas because, mostly you'll find these types of verses were quoted by the Goswamis, and when the Goswamis were present, then the edition of the book they had available to them was quite different from what we have available to us now. So there's been a lot of degradation over the years of the Shastra.
So is it the code of Sanskrit which makes the Bhagavatam remaining pure?
I think the Bhagavatam is also in Laukika, as I understand, is also in Laukika, but for some reason, possibly because of the emphasis our acharyas have given to the Bhagavatam, it's remained uncorrupted. That's the thing, because it's uncorrupted, whereas the others have become corrupted for various reasons. And also we see that, you know, essentially the Gaudiya Vaishnavas are the ones who put the emphasis on the Bhagavatam, whereas, you know, other groups, you know, the Mayavadis, they'll read Upanishads, etc. They don't accept Puranas or Itihasas as being important. Mostly for them is Upanishads. You know, and I think, you know, because of lack of purity in their line, you know, the things have become corrupted over the years. Just like, you know, that well known story of Ramanuja, where his guru was quoting something from Shastra and he's saying this means that Krishna has reddish cheeks like the backside of a monkey. You know, and because of his lack of purity, you know, and we see that even in some of the Vaishnava sects, is that someone becomes an acharya not by qualification but by deed. You know, like he'll go through all these different, like, you know, steps, like, you know, passing exams, so to speak, and then he becomes an acharya. Whereas we see in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, one becomes an acharya basically by their spiritual prowess, not by a deed. So you'll see in other groups that one gets a position of like spiritual leadership, not like in managerial sense, but in terms of being a leader of the sampradaya, because he's passed certain material levels of qualification. So what is the capacity or the right that person has to comment on the shastra? And actually, even we see, you know, various acharyas in our line, they're commenting on, you know, like, for instance, Jiva Goswami comments on the Brahma Samhita. So what is the qualification for someone to comment on such a book? That's their spiritual advancement. So I would say that there's the degree of that is people offering comment, translations, etc. like that on Shastra, where they have no right to do so. They have no qualification. So they're corrupted. Yeah. 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 That's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Jiva Goswami, I was here in the Tapa Sandhava, he sets the Bhagavatam just apart from everything else. This is nothing like the Bhagavatam. And I just think that's really important for us to understand that is we have this scripture which is extraordinary. This is, you know, the Amala Purana. It's the spot. All the other Puranas have got spots, you know, because of interpretation, etc. But the Bhagavatam is extraordinary, and we're so fortunate to actually have it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't want
to do that. Anything else? No. You'd have to ask someone like Bandaswami or Hridayananda Maharaj, they would know these things. I'm not particularly scholarly. I just read Prabhupada's books and try to understand. Well, that's certainly our understanding of it, but then whether or not other people would take the same understanding. Yeah, yeah. But I'd say that's our understanding of it, but, you know, in order to establish it in the mind of scholars or other religious groups, as Keshav Guru was pointing out, we need to go a little bit further. Yeah. In order to establish it in the mind of others, we need to have some criteria to do that. And just to say, you know, well, it's come from Krishna, others may not accept that.
No,
yeah, that's okay. We accept that. No one's disputing that point. But the point being is that, you know, in order to establish that in the minds of others who are not devotees, that would not necessarily be a praman for them. You know, we need to sort of, you know, be able to establish it on other grounds. And, you know, Jiva Goswami goes into it in quite a lot of depth here in the Tapa Sandarbha. Okay. Kantarachur Bhagavatamaki Samaveta Bhaktavrindiki Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Nitai Go Premanandi.